Appreciate Mark's work this morning. Mosey Lister is just about one of my favorite songwriters ever. Until the storm passes by, I don't know if you can come up with lyrics that are too much better than what Lister did in that song. Talking about the idea of holding fast in the midst of storms. Excellent, excellent words. I appreciate Mark leading that song and others to prepare us for what we're going to look at here in Mark 14 this morning. If you will look in your Bibles in Mark the 14th chapter, I invite you to relook at the story of Peter walking on the water and think about some things in this story that I think maybe we haven't thought about before, especially in relationship to the context of what's happening in Matthew. Begin reading with me in Matthew 14 and verse 22. It says, "Immediately he forced the disciples to get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, 'It is a ghost.' And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid.' And Peter answered him, 'Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water.' He said, 'Come.' So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, began sinking. He cried out, 'Lord, save me.' Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, 'Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?' And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'" Matthew Skinner, in an article he wrote on this text, said the following: "When Peter steps out of the boat, he enters a tumult. His motive isn't to escape from threat, for he goes into a situation where the threats will now look different, into a place where defying and reordering the assumed boundaries." Sometimes I think people imagine, and it has been assumed often in this text, that maybe Peter is making some ploy here to the divine. Maybe he wants to be like Jesus. And so in this moment, he sees Jesus and he wants to be like him, and he wants to do this miracle like Jesus and kind of be this divine sort of being, which I think is a gross misinterpretation of the text. And what Skinner is pointing out here is not that Peter somehow is stepping out of the boat and now all problems are going to be solved, or that he even imagines that all problems are going to be solved. In fact, he is stepping out of whatever security or safety there actually is in the boat out into the waves of the water, where the storm is raging. And to some extent, I think in the past, at least the way I've heard the story, maybe you've heard it differently, and I hope so, the story has been misinterpreted, this idea that this is in the midst of Peter sinning, and this is maybe because of some of the words of songs we've sung in the past, which maybe I'll talk about here in just a minute. But what I want to suggest to you this morning is that really this walking on the water text is about a mid-faith crisis. Just think for a moment. Many of you have been out on water before, maybe in a lake, maybe even out in the ocean. Some of you maybe been deep sea fishing. You've been out there and you see the power of the water. You just imagine that the Sea of Galilee is just this big bowl, the water sitting down there in the bottom, and very quickly we know storms can whip up over those mountains and sweep down to the water and produce huge waves. And this is not the first time the disciples have been in this situation. In fact, even in the Gospel of Matthew, this is the second time, back in chapter 8, they've already been in this scenario once before. And you remember, Jesus is sleeping there on the boat, a little bit like Jonah in the Old Testament. The storm is raging, and he's there sleeping. They say, "Why are you sleeping? Don't you see we're perishing?" Remember, he says, "Oh, you of little faith." And he calms the storm. This has happened before. This is not the first time. I would say this story is a little bit different than chapter 8. In chapter 8, they kind of willingly follow him onto the boat and begin to make this journey. In the midst of it, things change. Here, it's quite a different scenario. Jesus commands them. He really forces them onto this boat by themselves, and they're sent out into the midst of the sea. And in the middle of this scenario now, they're beginning to face the wind. They're facing the waves and the storms that are all around them. And they're having to figure out how they're going to make it through the storm to the other side. And so the story really begins, as many stories in the Gospels do, with this emphasis on the authority of Jesus. So I want to start there and quickly just set the stage for where this is going in the story of faith of Peter, really, and the other disciples, and understanding that really this story starts out as a story about Jesus' authority. They understand this, and if we read through Scripture thoroughly, we understand this. We see a divine connection to someone who is able to control the waters. This goes all the way back to the Psalms. And the fulfillment of Psalm 107 in passages like Mark 8 and Mark 14, where Jesus is able to say, "Peace, be still," and the winds and the waves obey his will, as we see. And we see the divine nature coming out of Jesus. But this is not really the only spot here. If you look back through Matthew, back in chapter 12, we see these Sabbath confrontations. And you remember that line, that famous line, "For the Son of Man is Lord of Sabbath." There's an authority statement being made here. A little bit later, he heals another person on the Sabbath. And then there is this connection to the servant in Isaiah chapter 42 that follows. And chapter 13 are these great parables of the kingdom and of Jesus' power and authority in the kingdom. And even in the preceding part of this chapter, Herod is afraid. He's fearful. Because there's this one who is arising, who is healing people, their sicknesses. And he thinks John the Baptist must have raised from the dead. This is a statement of power and authority. He feeds the 5,000 in the wilderness, the story directly preceding where we are this morning in chapter 14. And his disciples witness his glory as he breaks that bread and the fish, and he feeds thousands of people. And so this story is about Jesus' power. It's about his authority. And really, all of this ties together with what's happening here in the story, him commanding them, forcing them. The terminology, although it's vague in English, which is why I read it the way I did, he is forcing them into the boat. Immediately, he made them, it says in your version, likely. But it's the idea of being compelled. They are forced. He pushes them out into the sea, and he doesn't go with them. In a sense, he's going to throw them into the midst of this chaos and see how they react. See what they do. He's going to defy the natural boundaries, as Skinner says, as he walks out on the water to them. And he uses this phrase, "O you of little faith," here, I think in slightly a nuanced way in this story. They actually do have great faith, in a sense. But as Peter is out there on the water, this demonstration of great faith, stepping out of the boat and walking to Jesus, he does begin to have these doubts. In these fears. And what I want us to understand here is not that this is just about Jesus' authority, but ultimately where this is going, what I want to focus the majority of our time this morning, is that this becomes a story about man's struggle for faith. A struggle for faith really in the midst of faith. Because this is not Peter in the midst of sin. This is not Peter sinking deep in sin. Now that's a secondary application that song is using, that I am fine withdrawing from Love Lifted Me. But that's not what's happening here. He's not sinking deep in sin. He's sinking deep in obedience, just as the other disciples are. Here's the story. He feeds the 5,000. He forces them into the boat, and they are sent across to the other side. He commands them to go to the other side. The whole reason why they're in the midst of this sea is because Jesus commanded them, and they went. Because of their obedience, they find themselves in this situation. In fact, the whole story actually hinges on this reality. That they have to push deeper into the storm simply because Jesus commanded them to go to the other side. Kenny Chumley made this statement in his commentary in Matthew on this text. "It would have been easier to have turned around and run with the wind. But Jesus had said, 'Go to the other side.' And this they were determined to do. The notion that the passage of hazards, presence of hazards or difficulties indicates one is outside the will of God is unwarranted here. The disciples were facing rough going precisely because they were obeying Christ." I want us to stop and think about that for a moment. We face difficulty, we face struggle in our life, not just because we sin, but sometimes precisely because we're being obedient. Because Jesus said, go to the other side, and that's what we're trying to do. And that may be the case for you this morning. Maybe you're trying to be obedient. You're trying to do the will of God, and yet you're facing struggle after struggle. You are working through life and journeying through life, and it is hard and it is difficult. And you have all kinds of scenarios and situations in your life that are creating problems, those waves beating on you, even though what you're trying to do is the will of God. So how do we handle it? The disciples keep rowing into the wind. They row and they row and they row. And they're being tormented. That's the term actually behind that phrase there in the text. Their boat is being tormented by the wind. It's being torn and pushed and beat against. And yet they go forward, trying to obey the will of God, trying to obey the will of Christ to get to the other side at his word. They're trying to be obedient. None of this is by their own doing any more than the man who was born blind in John 9. He wasn't responsible for his blindness. But Jesus points out this gave an opportunity to reveal the glory of Christ. And in this story, I think it gives us an opportunity to see what faith really looks like. Now, sometimes we imagine faith looks like maybe Daniel, right? And that's a great picture of faith. Or maybe David and Goliath. Someone pointed out to me not too long ago, and I think it's a pretty accurate idea, that really David is Jesus in that story. He is the one who comes and he defeats the giant. And we want to put ourselves there, and certainly there's some applications there, but David is this messianic figure. But what faith really looks like is this idea that in the midst of faith, sometimes we waver. Sometimes there is difficulty. Sometimes there are doubts and fears. And that's what we see all throughout the Gospels, not just Matthew. But you see this in Mark and you see it in Luke. The disciples are walking there beside Jesus. They see him working miracles. They see him feed the 5,000. They see him feed the 4,000. And yet in the midst of the faith they do have, they still have doubts. I don't know about you, but that sure does explain me sometimes. There's things that are just beyond my comprehension to understand. And I have faith in God, and I believe God, and yet in moments I feel like it's just not enough. Or maybe I'm distracted by the things that are around me in the midst of trying to live a faithful life. There are all these things that influence and that hinder that, or are obstacles to that, that are trying to keep me from doing what I really need to be doing. But I would submit to you here, the disciples, they understand, to some extent at least, the authority of Jesus. This is a show of Jesus' authority. They're scared at first. They realize they're in the midst of the sea here. They've rowed. They're a long way from land. And they've been at this for hours, struggling and fighting. And now this figure appears on the water. Now listen, we understand this because we know the story. But you imagine yourself out there on the sea, being beaten by wind and waves, and suddenly this figure comes walking on the water. And you haven't read Matthew 14 before because it doesn't exist yet. Especially in their culture where they imagined all kinds of things like demons and spirits existing and creating problems. They probably think this is the end. They see this figure coming toward them, and ultimately they realize it's Jesus, and he makes this statement, "Take heart, it is I," or "I am." The divine epitaph, "I am." Don't be afraid. And now in this realization, Peter just wants to go to him. I don't think at all this is some ploy by Peter to be like Jesus or to assume the divine or anything like that. What it is he's in the midst of this storm. And what he knows is if he's going to go to the other side, and we know from Mark's account that Jesus intended to pass them by. So Jesus is kind of walking by them and hears them crying out and then begins to pay attention to it. But he intended to walk past them. That's what the text tells us in Mark. And I think what Peter understands is I'm going to go through the storm. If I'm going to go deeper in the storm, I want to go with Jesus. I don't want to stay in this boat. And whatever the implications are, whatever the risk, whatever the dangers, I see Jesus and I want to go to him. It is irrational to think you can step out of a boat and begin walking on the sea. They understand what the sea is. These men are fishermen. And that should tell us how bad the scenario is. He wants to get out of the boat and walk to Jesus on the water. because he doesn't feel safe in the boat anymore. And he's been out on the Sea of Galilee plenty of times before. But what we find here is this mid-faith crisis with Peter. He's trying to do the will of God. He gets out on the water, and even in the midst of being in the water, he begins to see the wind. Jesus is out there. He's walking to Jesus. He begins to see the wind. He begins to see the waves crashing in and looking at all the things he was looking at before when he was on the boat, and he begins to sink. And so in the midst of this demonstration of great faith, command me to come to you on the water if it's you, Jesus. Notice the wording there. Jesus is authority. He's power. He forces them into the boat. Peter doesn't say, hey, can I come out there with you, Jesus? No, command me and I will come. Call me out there, Jesus, and I will come to you. And he says, come. Peter won't go until he's commanded. This is not a sign of disobedience. This is not a sign of sin. This is a sign of utter obedience. He's waiting for the command of Jesus, and he goes out of the boat, and he gets on the water, and in the midst of that, he has this crisis of faith. Have you ever been there? You make this step of faith, and you get out there in the water, and things don't seem to be going too well. That's where Peter is. He believes it's the Lord. He believes it's Jesus. He says, command me, I will come to you. And he goes to him. And maybe in that first moment, he feels like he's really got his footing. And he steps out there and he begins to walk. And things seem, they seem really great. Begin as the distractions come. His feet begin to falter. He begins to sink. Lauren Winter wrote a book called Still and describes what she calls her mid-faith crisis. Very interesting book, a lot of really good reading in it. She's going through a divorce that she describes as really being her own fault. She admits her husband was not perfect, but really it was her that caused the problem. She was distant. She didn't understand how to have this relationship with him. She kept herself from him in many ways, emotionally. And she realized the impact, not on just her life, but on her husband's life as they're going through this divorce. And she's thinking of all this in terms of her faith. She says, once upon a time, I thought I had arrived. She thought she had it figured out. She stepped on the water and things seemed good. They were right. I would have said, blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. From here I say with the poet, O Lord of mercy, though I'm not ready nor worthy, I climb towards you. She recognizes it's not just so simple as it seems sometimes. Difficult things happen. Sometimes things that we can't explain or we don't understand. And what God wants is a lot like what Peter does here. That this faith where he's going to continue to come to him. He wants Jesus. He sees Jesus. And though he may be diverted when he cries out, he doesn't cry out, Zeus, save me. He doesn't cry out, Baal, save me, or Ashtaroth, save me. He doesn't cry out to the ship and say, save me, brothers, Lord, save me. When the heat is on and the speed are sinking, he knows who to call out to. And the picture of faith in this story, and in so many, if we look at it in a real way, is raw. It's real. It's what we really experience in life. And I believe really the reality, at least I can say this for myself, the reality of our own weaknesses maybe is why we struggle sometimes with things like prayer. We just realize our own insufficiency, our own weakness. Much like Peter, he gets out there in the water and when he takes his eyes off of Jesus, he sinks. It's not really about him, about the faith he has in Jesus. And he realizes this in this moment and calls back out to Jesus. And we struggle with things like prayer because we just feel ourselves as being so weak. We are demonstrating faith. We're trying to act in faith. But yet we have these weaknesses and we have these doubts and we have these fears just like the disciples do here. Another writer said this, prayer was the last skill I learned. I practiced rigorously. I believe she came from a Catholic background. Just as I was getting good, I lost it. As soon as it was gone, I understood it was not a skill at all. What she's saying is she approached it so technically and so formally, saying all the right words and all the right phrases and all the right ways. And what she was missing was, Lord, command me to come to you. Lord, save me. Just those quick, those simple prayers, a true longing for the divine transcendency. And that's what Peter wants. He looks at the water. He knows men can't walk on water. He understands that. But he wants to transcend that because that's where Jesus is. He's changing the boundaries of reality. He wants to go out to Jesus, even though he knows that men can't do that. Not because he wants to show how great he is, but because of how great Jesus is, and he knows that's where he wants to be, even though it's irrational. We are influenced by the culture. We are heavily influenced by the age of reason, by the Enlightenment, by rationality. And so we struggle, I think, with prayer. Because sometimes it seems so irrational. But I want us to see the irrationality of Peter's request to come out on the water to Jesus. And yet his willingness to do this as a man of the water, as a man who knows how this works, he's willing to take that step. I think in these moments where we have this small glimpse of the transcendent. Lawrence talked about this a little bit, but he was here for the meeting. We feel a little bit about like that man in Mark 9. I believe, Lord, help my unbelief. Have you ever been there? It's much like that scene that Lawrence pictured for us in the meeting. Maybe you're at the Grand Canyon, or you're someplace, it's just indescribable. Maybe you're out somewhere in the country, and it's just complete darkness. And you look up at the sky, and it's just amazing to see the sight that you see. And in that moment, you think, I believe, help my unbelief. I don't understand the vastness of the earth. I don't understand that the beauty of certain moments when harmony of voices come together and it touches my heart. I don't fully understand all of that, but it gives me this sense of belief and faith, yet at the same time, help my unbelief. He realizes his own weakness, this man who's boy is suffering there from the demon, and he comes to Jesus because he knows Jesus is the answer. He sees Jesus and he comes to him because he knows Jesus is the one who can heal. And he says, I believe, but at the same time, Lord, help my unbelief. I don't fully grasp this. It's beyond my comprehension. But I know that you're the answer. And so our faith can be attacked by fear and doubt through any number of difficulties that torment us as we're even striving for obedience. Certainly, we have this when we're being disobedient. When we are sinking deep in sin, as the song says, we can have much of these fears and these doubts in those moments as well. Those are times when we need to cry out equally for Jesus to save us. But I think we do need to understand that sometimes this happens even in the midst of obedience, even in the midst of faith, just like Peter here when he comes out on the water because of his faith, and yet he begins to sink. And that can happen in our life in so many different ways. Maybe it's a wayward child. You raise that child to be here and to read Scripture and to sing and to pray. And you look and you know it's not right. Or maybe family distress, or a broken or struggling marriage, or the death of a parent, or a child, or a grandchild. None of those are things of disobedience. None of those things are sinking deep in sin. It is just the reality of life, the waves, the wind beating on us, the struggles that we face. Maybe the loss of your own health or unexpected diagnosis of sickness. Maybe it's a faltering career. You look and you see there's no future in this, or just a job loss altogether, and all the things that you thought were going to happen in your life begin to dissipate and fade away. Maybe it's the hatefulness displayed by a supposed friend, someone you thought you were close to. Maybe it's miscarriage, or failed adoption, or inability to conceive, or any number of other things that in the midst of obedience we have these mid-faith crises. Sometimes the ways of life seem to beat on all sides. And we struggle and we wonder if I'm good enough. We have doubts and we have fears. We ask the wrong question. It's not about whether I'm good enough. it's really about the power and the authority of Jesus. Lately, we listen to songs at night when I put Xander in bed. One of the ones we've listened to lately is In the Eye of the Storm. I don't like necessarily all the words of that song. They're not bad. But I really love the main idea. I think it speaks to this concept right here. In the eye of the storm, you remain in control. Everything seems chaotic around me. I don't have the answers. I don't understand why these things happen. And in fact, the author of the song, he's writing from his own experience. He was an EMT for 8 years. And he witnessed all kinds of problems and difficulties in people's life. In his own life, his wife had a miscarriage of twins. He had a close friend whose daughter died of a sickness. And if you listen to that song in the third verse, you'll see those things coming out of the lyrics of the song. In the eye of the storm, God's in control. In the eye of the storm, some of the storms pass, but more storm is coming. And we're reminded of that. We feel the rain, and we hear the wind, and we feel the wind, and we know there's more storm coming. But what he's saying is, God remains in control. Even when it seems out of control for us, and it's interesting, even in the midst of a storm, there is order. You notice that? I mean, it's amazing order in our world, in the earth that we look at, to see the formation, the creation that God has given to us, and the way in which the world operates. Even in a hurricane, there is order to it. There's that eye, that tight eye. And so he says, in the eye of the storm, God remains in control, surrounded by his love. It doesn't mean all the problems are going to go away. It doesn't mean the storm isn't going to continue to come. No, we have to be steadfast. We have to have faith until the storm passes by, as we sang earlier. But he knows in the midst of all of this, God is in control. And this is really what separates us from everyone else. And maybe we haven't thought much about that at times. This desire for the transcendent, realizing there is something beyond what is here and what is now. The way things are operated, the way things are ordered here, there's something really beyond that, and longing for that, desiring something more, even in the midst of the storm and struggle, even if it ultimately leads to death here, there's something beyond all of this, and God remains in control. And so Peter's story ought to be relatable to us. As we live by faith and struggle through faith, we realize Jesus isn't mine because I'm just so amazingly faithful or I'm so great, but because he's so amazingly merciful. I love the contrast between Peter in Luke 5 and Peter in this story. You may remember in Luke 5, they've been out at sea for a while fishing, and they've caught nothing. And Jesus comes up to Peter and says, throw your net into the deep. Go back out into the deep. And Peter says, okay, well, you know, we've caught nothing. We're fishermen. Kind of know how this works, but at your word, there's still a little bit of faith even there. At your word, we'll do this. Quite a bit of doubt there in Peter at that moment. And you know the story. They throw the nets in and they have this enormous catch that they bring up as this story of faith is developing for them. But in this story in Matthew 14, he sees Jesus there beginning to pass them by, and he says, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you. Command me to come into the deep. This progress of his faith and the strength that only just this little faith that he has, but it is still a faith, and he's coming to Jesus and he wants to be with Jesus. Reminds me of James 4. Draw near to him and he will draw near to you. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you. And through all the difficulties in Peter's life and the rash decisions that he makes, there's still this element, this longing, that is a lesson for all of us, this desire to want to be where Jesus is, even if there's risk, even if there's danger in the path, even if it doesn't seem like the easy path for so many. He's willing to step out of the water and the winds and the waves, and he's willing to go deeper into the storm just to get to Jesus. And then ultimately, this story turns into a story about Jesus' abundant grace. Grace is realized. Grace has appeared to all men. But grace is realized when authority and faith meet. Have you ever thought about that? That's where grace is understood. That's where grace becomes powerful. It's when authority and faith meet, and that's what happens in the story. We see the authority of Jesus, that he is able to defy all boundaries. He's walking on the water, and Peter sees this, and in faith he says, "Command me to come to you," and he comes. And then he begins to sink, and he cries out, "Lord, save me," and he reaches out his hand. And his faith, mixed with the authority of Jesus, grace, is realized in that moment. So this story is really ultimately about not just the authority of Jesus, but the grace of Jesus. Think about this with me for just a minute. He calls Peter to come to him out on the water. And he watches him fail. I don't even mean that as harshly as it sounds, but it's reality. You know, Peter does demonstrate faith. He wants to come to Jesus. He begins to walk on the water, but he begins to sink. He's looking at everything else. He takes his eyes off of Jesus, and he's seeing the waves, and he's seeing the winds. And now he's beginning to sink. And so Jesus calls him out here and he begins to fail. Jesus could say, "Hey, I told you to come out here and look at me and look what you did. This is not the kind of person I want, Peter. Just let him sink." But as I said in the very beginning, it's an opportunity to show the glory of Christ and show the message of the gospel. He watches him fail, yet he still reaches out and takes hold of his hand. And what I want us to understand is that God gives grace to us. He gives us confidence to take steps of faith, even when the outcome is uncertain. Even when we're not sure how the mystery of our life is going to unfold, he wants us to take these steps of faith. And so I have to ask you, what steps of faith are you resisting? What are you afraid of? What is it that you're not doing because you fear? I'll tell you something that I've struggled with for a long time in my life and in my marriage. It has to do with leadership and headship in my home and working on that even now. For whatever reason, and maybe many of you are in the same place, just develop the habit to pray together and to read together the scripture with my wife is something that we just haven't been able to develop over our lifetime. For whatever reason, distractions come in. And so we don't have this consistent habit to do this, and we're trying to change that. It's hard. But you know why for so long I didn't step out and say, "We need to do this"? I was afraid. I was afraid of the reaction. "Hey, this has been going on for years. Why do you want to change it now?" Don't we fear those kind of things for whatever irrational reason? And so we don't take the step. We fear the failure that may come in those moments when we realize the things we really ought to be doing, and yet we still don't do them. And we fear what our wife is going to say, or our husband is going to say, or what our kids are going to say, or what other people are going to say. And so instead of taking that step out of the boat, we just stay there in the comfort, whatever seemingly comfort there may be in there. We stay there and we don't step out in faith because we're afraid to fail. And I'll tell you what, with all the failures and the falters in Peter's life, he got out of the boat. And he wanted to go to Jesus. And I sure hope that I will do that in my life when the moments come. That I won't be paralyzed by fear. I won't be worried about what other people are going to think. I won't cater to shame or whatever it may be that keeps me from taking these steps of faith because I'm so worried about failure. I'm so worried that things aren't going to go well, that I'm going to begin to sink. His grace reaches me. I need to understand that. When Peter cried out, "Lord, save me," he reached out his hand and he picked him up out of the water. That is the story. The story is to take the steps of faith because Jesus is powerful. He is the authority, and Jesus' grace is abundant. He wants us to come to him. "Command me to come to you," he says. "Peter, come." He wants you to come. That step of faith this morning may be that you need to come to Christ. Initially, you need to give your life to him. You need to take whatever little faith you have right now, and you need to gear that toward looking to Jesus and making this a reality. Matthew Skinner says this about the nature of faith. It is the nature of faith, humble, active faith, to be willing to throw oneself into a disorderly world and expect to encounter Jesus there. It is the nature of faith, even little faith, to want to transcend the normal rules and see what possibilities might be brought into being. It is the nature of faith even to waver from time to time when it is stepped into stressful, unfamiliar terrain, because as Peter discovered, Jesus is there where the boundaries are being redrawn, extending life-giving stability, and the chaos gets the upper hand. A great summary, I believe, of the story in Matthew 14. And it may be you worry what your family's going to say. What are they going to say if you come and you're baptized in the Christ this morning? How are they going to react to this? They say, oh, you're really going to change your life now? Look at all these problems you've had in the past. You're telling us you're really going to change? You're going to feel this shame? You're going to feel the difficulty of this moment? Step out of the boat. Act in whatever little faith you have and make it happen. And look to Jesus the whole way. And when the winds and the waves are there beating on you, realize who it is you need to cry out to. That's the message of Matthew 14.